Joining me in our makeshift studio, or trestle table, however, you know, potato, potato, is Kimball Elliott, and she's the director of critical and creative thinking here at Red Hill. You've got to be probably the only director of critical and creative thinking in the country. I mean,
well,
is this a position that is
possible, but I mean, it's a fabulous position to have.
This sounds like a dream job.
Yeah.
All right. So tell me what it entails. What is it?
The most important thing is obviously from 3 years old to 18 or 19 when our children matriculate, developing their powers of critical and creative thinking.
Mm-hmm.
Getting them to the position of being able to critique and to think independently and to identify things like bias and fake news and all kinds of other things. And to develop their conceptual reasoning. A lot of school asks for content knowledge. A lot of life asks for conceptual understanding. And so we're working on building conceptual reasoning and understanding.
And how young does that start?
From 3 years old.
Give me an example of how you would start a creative or critical thinking process with a three-year-old.
What is a friend?
Ah, lovely.
And so developing their understanding.
The most basic things that, in other words, to assist them to make decisions that are going to be very important decisions throughout their lives.
Absolutely. And one of the things that we use a lot is Philosophy for Children, which is an international movement, and we have a number of our teachers trained in it, where the children move into philosophical inquiries, and from very small are answering big questions. You know, would you rather be a lonely dragon or a hunted unicorn? And they're
Hold on, I want to ask Zanati that question, Zanati. Would you rather be a lonely dragon or a hunted unicorn?
Yeah.
I know the answer. You don't need to even go
No, lonely dragon.
Really? Mm. I called it wrong. Mm. I thought you'd want to be a unicorn. Okay, why do you want to be a lonely dragon?
Because dragons are fearless and fiery and they don't need to get approval from anybody to, and they can just be.
Mm. And the sense of loneliness?
Mm.
Okay, I get that. But, I don't know, it's a very difficult question.
Does loneliness mean the same thing as being alone?
Ah, that's a question. You need to be able to be fulfilled with your own company. That's the thing.
And that's not the same as being lonely.
Yeah.
So those are the kinds of concepts that we start to unpack with the children. And what's really interesting about Philosophy for Children is that actually it's not for children, it's for everybody.
Of course.
And just having the conversation with Zanati now and starting to unpack the idea of what are loneliness and aloneness the same thing? What are the qualities of a dragon? Those are the kinds of conversations that we have with children from 3 years old to 18 or 19. And in fact, we do it with the staff and the parents too.
And what an incredible gift you're giving the kids. You know, I've just completed a book that I'm writing on positivity. It's hopefully going to be published in a short while. And one of the things that I deal with is that people so often in commerce and in the boardroom don't know their own stuff. So they might walk into an office in the morning and some person didn't greet them. And then they go into a board meeting and they're reacting so poorly to a subject that's on the table because that's triggered them in a way that they don't even understand.
Absolutely.
And what that does is it impacts on career and it impacts on relationships in so many ways because we all react. We've got our points that come to us from different places, and if we don't if we don't understand what we're dealing with, and so many adults don't. Mm-hmm. People that are hugely successful in corporates
are
completely stunted.
And well, certainly a huge part of what we do is develop the ability to collaborate with different people and to develop the listening power as opposed to the hearing power.
Mm.
So the understanding that goes with listening, and certainly in philosophical inquiry, one of the things that children are challenged to do is to listen to what the person is trying to say and then develop the argument. So it's not a back forth, you're wrong, I'm right, you're wrong, I'm right. Mm. It's more, I understand what you were saying, I disagree with this, I agree with that. And so they're developing the rules and the ability for argumentation, not argument. It's not adversarial.
Right. I think Martin Seligman talks about that in one of his books, where he says it's the most difficult thing to do.
So
because you make yourself
them.
Most vulnerable when you actually listen to somebody.
Absolutely. Mm. And not listen to reply, but listen
Absolutely.
To understand.
Absolutely.
So those are sort of central things in philosophy for children. And then there are other things that we do as well where there are programs like Habits of Mind, which develop dispositional thinking, the ability to be flexible, the ability to persevere, the ability to think creatively. And so we forefront those in the children's education.
Does this happen in the classroom, or does this happen not only in the classroom but also on the sports field and in the playground?
I think it happens in both. And what's really it happens consciously in the classroom. Once it's developed in the classroom, certainly my understanding and certainly what I've seen myself is that you'll see children who are having supposedly an argument, and one of them will say, well, I don't agree with you on that point, or I disagree with you on that point, rather than you're wrong, I'm right. And so you asked if it happens on the field consciously. No, not specifically, but we're hoping that those skills sort of move into their other aspects of life. And certainly a Red Hill child is exposed to all areas, sports, drama, cultural activities, public speaking. What's very interesting about things like philosophy for children and habits of mind and thinking skills is that they do impact on things like debating, because the children are able to give more nuanced arguments. So it's really, really exciting to see. We also work with the teachers, obviously, and developing these skills in the teachers and in the way that they construct their curricula with the children.
That must be quite a challenge for teachers because, they've been trained in a certain way that doesn't necessarily reflect this type of approach. They might come from another school that is perhaps a little bit more rigid with regard to syllabus and with regard to style. How long does it take for somebody to come on board with the style? And do you have resistance?
There has been resistance, but I think most resistance is to do with I feel uncomfortable.
How
long is a piece of string? Some people dive in and are prepared to take it. Others need to be, have their hands held along the way. And what we've done over the last 3 years, and this is our fourth year, is that we've developed a professional learning community. And there are sort of five legs to the professional learning community table. And they range from having conversations about pedagogy. Lawyers talk about law and doctors talk about medicine, teachers talk about Marx. And Marx actually are not in any way meaningful in terms of education. They're a measure. And often the marks have happened 3 months before. If we're dealing with reports, so much has happened.
We've got a very specific attitude at home that we basically don't even look at the marks on our kids' report card, but we look at the notes. And in fact, we saw that at a school in New York quite some time ago, about 15 years ago. And what I thought was incredible was at the end of the term, no kid got a report, but they got a letter from the teacher. And if it was math, they would say, you've really tried, or this is the areas that you've really we're comfortable with, these are the areas that we need to do some additional work on. And it was written to the child,
so
not to the parent.
So it's feedback for learning.
Absolutely.
Rather than marks, which are quite closed-ended, sort of appear to be cast in stone.
Yes.
Of course, anyone in education knows that they're not, but they've come to mean something different than what they were meant to mean in the beginning.
I also find it incredibly stupid. I mean, I don't know other, I can't even use another word for it, that we are often, we go to parents' feedback and our children aren't with us. And I'm thinking, what are we sitting there talking about the learner? They need to be here, not us.
It's interesting that you mention that, because here the children do come.
Right.
And in our prep school last year, they started student-led conferences. So the student prepares for their own conference back to their parent and explains what they've done well, where they need assistance,
Fantastic.
What their goals are for the next.
Because that's introspection and a little bit of honesty and looking at yourself in a critical way.
Well, one of the huge drives, certainly of my job, is to develop self-reflection and metacognition, the ability to think about our thinking or our actions.
Right.
And certainly the student-led conferences in the prep school do that. And having the children in the high school with us means that we're not talking about them. They are actually the central person in the conversation. We're talking about how can I assist you to get to where you want to be.
Yeah, well, that's one of the things I remember, that, you know, of our childhood, is waiting for your parents to come home.
After parents' evening, yes.
Do you think my teacher told them that about
how
that one incident?
Yes,
exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. 100% right.
Yeah.
Michiel says, when my father was principal, there used to be a student there. He always went to the tuck shop and bought sweets and chocolates for me and my friends, and he would get upset with me when he tried to bill at the end of the term. Oh, I had the choice of being the principal's son. All right, well, Michiel, that's good luck to you. And somebody else saying, how does one deal with a four-year-old when told to go on the thinking step, and he responds, I already did think, that's why I did it.
Oh, I love that.
I also love that.
That is a great challenge, yes. Mm. How would you deal with them? I think probably the question would be to ask, and what did you think about your actions? So immediately try and get them to reflect on their thinking. What was your thinking, and what do you think about that thinking? So that they start to examine their own reasons for things.
Incredible. I would imagine, is there a way to measure success in this field? There isn't really, surely.
I think it comes in the interactions that we have with children.
Mm.
I'm very fortunate in that I'm working with grade 10s and 11s this year, and we're doing the grade 11s and 12s are starting the International Baccalaureate, some of the children who've chosen to do that. And the subject that I'll be teaching is theory of knowledge, which is the central question of the subject is, how do we know? How do we know that we know? And certainly my conversations with these grade 11s who were grade 10s last year are that they are extraordinary thinkers, incredibly bright, articulate, and able to develop their reasoning in a way that is unparalleled in many, many circumstances.
Absolutely, and that's where we leave it. It's Campbell Elliott, and you are the Director of Creative and Critical Thinking.
I am.
Absolutely fantastic. What a dream position.
I love it. Thank you very much for chatting to me.
Well, thank you for your time. It's 8:28.